Yeah, my name's Andy. I'm an addict.
Hi, Andy.
We have the chair. Right. Right. Lovely. Don't remember things very well. Yeah, fantastic. I love this fellowship. You know, like, I've had enough smiles in it to last me a week. You know, like Dave said to me, he said, don't swear, Andy, because like, I'm doing the recording and I'll have to edit out all the swearing, you know, so I thought that was pretty funny. And I thought he was being serious. That was the fucking problem. I thought he was being serious. I thought, what am I going to do? Anyway. N.A. The desire to stop using. I've got down here, desire to stop, move away from using, stop, process of moving towards N.A. I suppose that's what it's about. I used, my story was I started smoking cigarettes when I was 8. Capstan full strength. Went all fuzzy, thought it was fantastic, you know, the head, ooh, oh yes, I like that. And I was playing with my budgerigar in the bedroom. And it flew away and it dropped down the back of the bloody, the wardrobe. And it's squawking, it's going, ee-ee. This is 2 o'clock in the morning, now the fag's on, the budgie's behind the bedroom, you know, and I'm worried about my mother coming in and saying, what you're doing, you know. So that was how it kind of started. And, by the time I was 10, 11, I was drinking. By the time I was 14, 15, I was smoking cannabis. 15, 16, taking tablets. By the time I was 18, I was injecting Class A drugs, methamphetamine, heroin. And by the time I was sort of 19, 20, we come to the serious bit now, I tried to commit suicide. And I did. And it was quite tragic, really, because, and I say this younger, beautiful young person, I'd already had enough of using, basically. So that was my progression. And I managed to carry on using for another, say, 20 years after that. And I kind of wanted to stop. But I didn't know how. I've got in, you know, like I sort of inject, it was good because using sort of allows you to watch paint dry and not get on with life. It's quite nice, really. You can inject, you know, mind-numbing indifference into your veins and it's okay. And I always sort of remember, because I celebrated a 60-year birthday. Now, it's out there, ladies. So if I ever tell you I'm 53, I'm fucking lying, all right? I am 60. And I've got, you know, like, and I've come to terms with it. It's not a good thing, but I've sort of gone through, you know, I've come on through the other side now. And so when I started using, you'd get sort of packets of, the amps would have, you know, and it'd have poison written on it. And it'd have a skull and crossbones on it. So it would it kind of tell you something, you know, that this stuff, you know, like, it's quite dangerous. One shouldn't be using this, you know. But I didn't let that deter me, a silly little skull and crossbones and poison. What do they know? Fuck, you know. And it was kind of like that. And you're told lies, aren't you, that drugs aren't any good. Drugs are terrible, really awful, and they really, don't take drugs. But any time, you know, when I had a drink at 12, I thought, this is fantastic. Oh, I loved it. You know, the fag made me fuzzy, the drink made me even fuzzier. You know what I mean? So it was fantastic. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the buzz. But at the back of it, though, the serious part of it was that I kind of knew something had shifted, and I was in a... This wasn't quite right for Andy. He was sort of kind of, I could see, I was sort of going out of control already. And So, and like I say, in the drugs in the 60s, they were all ramped up in boxes. There's people here who remember. There's one looking at me lovingly at the moment, David here. Young David remembers. You know, they were all in these boxes and, you know, 20 milligram meant 20 minigram. And, you know, a sixth of a grain was a sixth of a grain. And we were quite spoilt in some ways. And, the thing was, I remember my dad, we were sitting outside a pub once, and he goes, I was running around in the fields, I was only about 10, I thought I was a Cisco kid or Billy the Kid, and I had my own horsey, and I'm running around, patting my arse, and, you know, I had so much energy, like, flying around here, flying around here, flying around there, and I've come back, and I've been running for about 40 minutes, and I sort of plop myself down, and my dad is sitting there, and he's got a pint of lager in his hand, and they've let me have a taste, and automatically my body totally rejected it. I mean, that's horrible, you know, what is this stuff? And sort of 2-3 years later, and he said, oh, that's right, he said, it's an acquired taste, and I fucking acquired it quite quickly, you know, by the time I was 12, lovely, and it was the same with heroin. The first time I picked up with heroin, I was puking my guts up for, you know, 2 days. Oh, I'll never do this again. I'm never going to... This is terrible. Terrible. What terrible stuff this is. Onk, onk, all that. Supposed to go to a wedding, and I was fit. Well, you... The rest is history, isn't it? You know, I picked up the heroin. The same with cannabis. You know, you have that first joint, and you're trying to, I'm trying to make out I knew what I was doing. Because I was in the house where Donovan lived. If those of you who remember who fucking Donovan was, but, and I'm sitting in there, and there's a few rock stars there, minor B-list rock stars, and they've given me this cannabis, and fuck all's happening. They said, hold it down. And you're holding it down, and you're blowing it out, nothing happened. And then, but 3 days later, I thought, well, fuck this for a lark. I rolled up 3 in my house at home, rolled up 3 of these joints, and I got stoned. So I sort of persisted at this stuff, you know, contrary to the evidence. I was sick on the heroin, you know, I didn't like the taste of alcohol, cannabis didn't work straight away. The only thing that kind of I liked was about, you know, I also liked was the amphetamines. I couldn't understand, you know, the come down. I didn't understand that it was the amphetamines that were giving me this come down. So the using was totally nutty. And like I say, by the time I was 1920, I had my first suicide attempt. And I'd already had enough by the time I was 20, basically. And yet, it was my coping mechanism. And I share this all the time. This is sort of for newcomers, that, you know, the drugs did stop the bad stuff coming in, but they also stopped the good stuff coming in as well. So people are bending over backwards to help me, and they're really trying to help me. Members of my family were trying to help me. Even when I was working, people were trying to help me. Friends of my parents were trying to help me. I wasn't having it, basically. I couldn't see it. I didn't want to have anything to do with it, really. And I don't know why I wrote this. Anyway. But I didn't know about NA then. I didn't know how to stop, so I just continued using for years and years, you know. The other thing, I wrote this down because I thought this was quite amusing. You know, when you sort of first start using, you're trying to figure out, you know, the meaning of life. You know, and you're angsting about why this, but you can't even wash your own underpants, you know. Like, there's a sort of, it's sort of incongruous. I was trying to sort out these great, deep and meaningful things, you know. Who am I? Why am I here? Why do we exist? Why does the sun spin round and all that nonsense? But I couldn't even get it together to pay the rent, wash me underpants, wash me clothes, feed myself, just do the basic stuff. So I know that was one of these. Oh, the great thinker, you know, be walking up and down Clapham High Road, like, trying to figure it all out, and in the end I figured fuck all out, basically, you know. Yeah, blimey, what have I got written down here? Yeah, so the thinking was pretty fucked, basically. I was trying to sort of work it out, and you know, I didn't know whether I was Michael or Mabel. You know, I've been in and out of that closet so many times. I think I'm back in again now. It's kind of all right. You know, I've settled down now. I'm staying in there. I've pulled the door shut now. I'm in the closet. It's okay. But it was about this sort of, this journey, this sort of, so this is the sort of, this addict trying to make sense of it all, this inability to receive life. This is this addict, it, totally confused. I really didn't know my arse from my elbow. Like, I thought everybody else down the West End was sorted, though. That was the funny thing. And I kind of know different now, that we were all going around totally confused and didn't know what the fuck we were. All we knew was where the chemist was, who the doctor was, who had a bit of gear and a sign on and nick a bit of money. That was about the extent of it. And also the stuff around the, you know, like about the thieving. I wasn't brought up in a family where I didn't come from a villainous background. Part of me wishes I had. Yeah, I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to live with pikeys and bank robbers and stuff like that, so we could smoke drugs, you know, like, so we could rob. I was the son of Robin Hood or somebody like that, you know, really. But I wasn't. My dad owned a delicatessen. So. I sold sausages for a living. Mind you, I did have a laugh doing that, though, because we used to sell these big Polish sausages, like, you know, and the ladies would come in, and I would say, how much would you like, and I'd smile at them. And it was great, you know, but I wasn't a thief. Dishonesty didn't really sit with me that well, but, you know, once I started getting into using, having to lie about my using, trying to sort of make out that everything's okay, you were talking about the denial, and once the denial kicked in, that's what it was about, you know, I had to cover it all up, it all kind of went 180 degrees out of kilter, really, and my thinking was mixed up, it was dishonest. You know, I had to be dishonest to myself to continue doing what I was doing. Thank you. So that, you know, enough about the using. And in that time I had a daughter. I had physicians down in Harley Street. I didn't do this standing on corners waiting for fucking drug dealers, really. I was a physician man by myself, quite grandiose, just to go and pay my doctor money and he would write me out nice prescriptions. I wasn't a common or garden addict like yourselves. I wasn't grandiose. Because I'd save me dough up, you know what I mean? For 2 weeks I'd have that 140 quid I need, and I'd go and see the doctor, and I'd say, hello doctor, so nice to see you today, and say, you know, the fuck, all the total and utter bollocks I'd tell him. I'd pay him the money, here's 60 quid, he'd give me my prescription, and it was like, that was your wage packet for the next 2 weeks, you know, you had 100, you know, amps in the chemist, then you could sell for £5 down the West End and save a little for yourself. And I did do the other stuff. I tried dealing, like, proper, you know, powders and all that. I'm hopeless, totally hopeless. Just used it all. I never made a profit. Not a penny. Not a fucking penny. And then, you know, like, and then there was three of us living in my house, and, you know, like, and it was just, like, we had so much gear. Like, the geezer goes, oh, yeah, Andy, there's a policeman in that telephone box. In the telephone box outside the house. I'm peering out the window and I reminded him there is no telephone box outside the window, but he was adamant there was a policeman in there in the telephone box watching me. And we had so many people, we'd go, do you want some, we couldn't even, you know, like, we had so many drugs and and we still sort of nosed it. We couldn't sell anything. We ended up using it, and it was chaos. My life was total and utter chaos. It was about the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We did find ways and means to get more. That just meant, you know, like we'd find different doctors, or people would come round with drugs for us to sell them, and we'd hold them. You know, I remember some bloke coming round, and we just held him captive for 3 weeks until he'd use his drugs. You know, come in, oh yeah, really friendly, we're really nice in here, and wouldn't let him go. Terrified the guy. So, enough of that now. Prison was the same, you know, like I wasn't a thief, I wasn't these things. I knew, and it goes back to what I was saying in the beginning, I wasn't this thing, I wasn't this dishonest person. I remember being on the landings in prison for the first time. Now, I'm quite sort of well-spoken and stuff like that, and I'm trying to get a bit of gear off this bloke on the landings, and he's going, and I've never been to prison, right? So instead of sort of speaking English to me, he comes out with this fucking foreign language, and he goes, "Nitto, nitto, kanga." "Nitto, nitto, kanga." And he's getting more and more agitated, and the more agitated, he's just going, "Nitto, nitto, kanga." I think, what's he fucking talking about, "Nitto, nitto, kanga"? I didn't know what "nitto, nitto, kanga" was. I still don't know until this day. Maybe somebody can explain, but I did end up in the block. Me and him, he was in one cell, and I was in the other cell, you know. That's my Nitto Nitto Kanga story. What a load of old nonsense. I was just no good at this stuff, really. And then I went, I done one treatment centre, and it was very nice, Christian and all that. Very, you know, you pray for your dinner and after dinner, and they was really kind people. Ducks, Newfoundland dogs. Go to church on Sunday, but it was like a convalescent home for drug addicts from the West End, and we did nothing about the addiction though. That was the thing. And as soon as I came out of there, I used basically. I had no sort of idea about this stuff. And then I went out again. I was out for another 10 years, 10 bloody years. I gave it another 10 years, and time does fly. It just, I can't believe how time does fly, especially when you're using and not enjoying yourself, you know, and you're sitting there, and it does, you know, and the gear does make it okay. It does make it okay to settle for second best. It does make it okay to settle for two bob. Well, it did for this addict. As long as I had a bit of care, you know, you could do what you like with me, you could... Well, you could, basically. I was, you know, like, I was for sale, mate. For a bit of gear, I was for sale. I'd do anything, more or less. And all the things I didn't think I'd do in the beginning, I became this person. I would do anything for a lump of gear. You know, I'd steal off my family, I'd steal off my friends, I'd prostitute myself. You know, I would... And it was quite, you know, and that was what it all came to. That's what it all boiled down to in the end, this sort of, that's not valuing myself, basically. And then I sort of moved into treatment. I did treatment in the big house in South London. And that's when I first got my sort of first taste of recovery. And it was just such a kind, it was such a relief. To start sort of understanding this, you know, the addiction side of it. Because they was giving me Gestalt therapy, CBT, transactional analysis, Kundalini's, high energy bops in the morning, all this old nonsense. But it's... I thought, how's this stuff going to keep me clean? I couldn't make the connection. And then this blonde girl come in, nice looking, nice. Blonde hair, little mini skirt, short, yeah, very attractive. She said, "I'm an addict." I thought, yes, this is great. And I went to all the meetings. She was coming every Thursday. I'll be there first. I'll be in the seat there, sitting there. All my t-shirts, all nicely pressed, jeans pressed, had a bath, plenty of deodorant, lovely. And I was there, but she carried the message to me. And then... And the first thing was, you know, like, that alcohol is a drug. We are people with the disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover. Oh, thank goodness for that. Because I thought, lager is not it's not a drug. I thought, that's just so great. And it started making these sort of connections for me. And then it was for the first time I started getting involved. I went through the process of treatment, and I enjoyed it there, though. You know, there was a man there, Tony. Right, and so he's dead now, so he won't mind. Tony Chesney, like, it was a wonderful man. He was an addict from the West End, and he was one of my counsellors there, and he was such a nice man. And you know, what a wonderful bloke he was. But he died of this illness. And he was a counsellor there, but he showed me lots of things, and he taught me things, and he was kind to me. I could say I loved that man. He was, you know, what a nice bloke. And he sort of encouraged me to go to meetings and stuff, but the fucking Nana never went himself. That was the thing. He never went and he definitely encouraged me to go to meetings, and I started getting into the process. And for the first time in my life, I started understanding, you know, this illness that I have. You know, this spiritual illness, you know, this sort of physical allergy that I have to drugs. And it kind of makes sense, you know, like, I don't know if I'm, you know, a great one on the, you know, like, is it a disease, is it an illness, what is it, you know. But it fits, you know, like, when I call myself an addict, that makes sense. I'm a recovering addict, I'm not a recovering pork sausage, I'm a fucking recovering addict, you know. And that, I can work with that. And I like the concept of disease, you know, that I have a disease. It was the only thing that started making sense about what I was doing to myself, basically. And then the steps came in. But I wrote something here, and I'll say, trust it. It says I was going to save it to the end, and I will, because it sort of moved me when I wrote it, because I do write things for a living, and if I don't write them down, I forget them. And some of these things are quite powerful and personal to me, and they mean stuff to me. That's why I write stuff down, really. I can do a chair without a piece of paper, but, you know, some things I write down, and I think they are quite meaningful and spiritual, and it is nice. And I'm in that position to touch people's lives by the things that I do now, whereas before I wasn't. You know, all I did was take before, you know, to try and feed this compulsion, this obsession, this addiction. You know, it was all about taking. It was all about me. You know, even when I was giving, I was taking. I was always taking more, though. That's the thing, and that's the sort of the nature of this illness. That's the nature of the beast. And for the first time, I'm in here, and I've it's been explained to me. The steps, I love the traditions as well, this we part, this we have a collective responsibility for each other's well-being, basically. It is anarchic, this stuff what we do. This is totally counter-culture, I love it. It's, you know, everybody's out there getting lagging drunk, and there's all us goody-goodies sitting in and say, no, we don't want it anymore, we don't want what's on offer out there, kind of thing. We want something on a bit of a higher plane. And it kind of worked, and, you know, this is what this is about. It's given me so much, this program. And those of you that know me, there's only three people in this room that are around. I've been around doing this about 21 years now, and there's only three people in this room that were around on my first bit of recovery. And I know they're still around. Because the bloke who gave me this shirt for my birthday, a lot of you know, I think it was just too small for him. I think he just dug it out from the wardrobe.
It's Tollis. Anyway, it was Tollis Gemilius. Beware Greeks bearing gifts. Don't tell him I told you so. No, stum. And it was, you know, like. And even after 7, you know, you'd think you'd know it all by 7 years, and I relapsed after 7 years. And I went out for another 4 years. And in that time I had another daughter, I had another relationship, and in that time that I was clean, you know, I got a lot of things together, and I can't, you know, that is part of my journey. I'm just really lucky to, you know, I'm really lucky to be alive, that's all I can say. Because a lot of people, and I share this all the time, like I bet everybody in this room must know at least between 10 and 20 people that have died of this illness. So it has this serious side to it. That's the edge, you know. People die as a result of this illness, and our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. So after 7 years, and it is cunning and baffling. It's a marvellous illness. I think it's a wonderful. It's the best illness in the world. If you're going to have an illness, you might as well have this one. This is like, you know, top drawer illness. It's an illness that tells you haven't got it for starters. You know what I mean? I'm 7 years into the program and I'm having a few lagers and having a few tablets, and the lager and the tablets are saying to me, it's nothing to do with us, Andy. Like, it's like, do you keep taking it, you'll be all right. It's the ex-wife, it's the job, it's, you know, it's nothing to do with the drugs. I couldn't, and I was so amazed that I couldn't focus on the substances. The substances, it's as if it was nothing to do with the substances that I was taking or injecting or drinking that were causing me these problems. They sort of vanished, and they sort of went around like that when I was over there. They were sort of, I couldn't even make the connection. It was fucking 7 years. I couldn't make the connection to the drink and the drugs. So how powerful is that? What a wonderful illness. And respect to it. And then, so I had 4 years out there, and I came back, and I left detox on Christmas Eve. No, it was New Year's Eve, and I went straight down to that Red Lion Square, and the music was dire. I was still getting over my detox and that. And I met a mate in there, and I saw some old faces. And it all just started again. The process started again. I was just so glad to be back in the rooms. I was so glad to get into detox. This, the last rock bottom. I was waking up every morning. A mate of mine had given me a job. He didn't do me anything. He's given me £80 a day to paint this flat in Welling Garden City or something. You know, one of those places. And I was getting £80 a day, and I was there on my own painting this flat, and every morning I was just waking up crying, because, you know, both my kid, one of my kids had put herself in care, the other, my partner had left with the other child, and I was just using, and I was just so, it was a different rock bottom than the last, you know, I don't think I had a rock bottom before, really. Well, I just wanted to get into treatment and get a flat, and this rock bottom, I was waking up every morning and I was in tears, crying, going, why me, Lord, why me, you know, all that kind of stuff for about 2 months. And then I got into detox, and it was, you know, like I say, people have a, it's like, I thought I was going on my holidays, I had my suitcase, I was bowling down that road in Bunk's Orchard Road, like, couldn't wait to get in there, like, just let me fucking in. And then, you know, and then it just started again, the NA stuff, they came in. And just reading the readings was just, who is an addict, you know, a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. Fantastic. It was all there. It was all sort of, it was there. The formula was there. And it was just great. I was just so pleased to be back in with you guys. You know, back in the NA, back, you know, back with my family. This is my family. You are my family. You know, you're, you know, all you lot. And I, you know, and I share this all the time, all the key rings, all the step work that I do, all the praying that I do, all the meetings that I do, all the conventions, all the NA campouts, all the messing about I do in NA just to keep me clean for one day. And you do, you keep me clean, you know. I am part of this. We are, you know, we're like communists. We are collective responsibility, brothers. You might not think you are, but you are. You are responsible for each other's well-being, basically, in some kind of way. This collective responsibility, fantastic. I love it. And then, so I met this guy. I can't see the time. So I'm getting old, I'm getting blind. 10 minutes. God. Right. 10 minutes. Right, okay, so... the desire to stop using... well, I'm in the process now, so if you're a newcomer, that's what we're sort of... I'm moving towards people in NA, and that's not easy. People in NA, you know how judgmental you can be, or I can be anyway. You know, you look around, oh, fuck. Look at his trainers, oh, look at the state of her, oh, fuck me, look at him. And all this old nonsense... all the time. And but what I, you know, what I've learned is that, you know, when I judge someone, I judge them from my shitty little perspective, you know, a little mean-spirited, nasty little person, and that's how I judge people, that's how I see people. So my, the judgment gets in the way of what's truly there. But I've only learned this by, you know, like from this sort of spiritual stuff that we do. I pray, you know, and I've got gratitude and acceptance, yeah, you know, in big letters, because that's what it was around. When I came round this time and I came out of the detox and I did the NA 10-minute business, the NA New Year's Eve thing, I was really sort of, I was just so pleased to be back. And you know, I met a mate there and he gave me a bit of work and I, you know, and I did, in the time-honoured tradition of NA, I actually went to work and signed on. I'm very proud of that, you know, because it's an honest program, and I am proud of that. Well, that didn't get as big a laugh as I thought it would, but anyway, sod it. And the other thing is, you always say at my meeting, I say, if you're signing on and working, can you please put double in the pot, you know? And then I started working, and I was working with a bloke in recovery, and slowly but surely it sort of all started to unfold again. I started going to meetings, and within 2 weeks, there was a lot of gratitude. I had a lot of gratitude for being clean. I was just so grateful to be back in the rooms. And back to the readings, they just made so much sense. Because it's like a sort of a rule book, isn't it? Just, there's the rules there, do the steps. You know, who is an addict? Why are we here? You know, what is the NA program? And it was just so much comfort to me. The rules were there then. It is kind of, you know, like it is kind of stupid proof, this program. And another thing, you know, like I believe in this sort of, you know, I've got to put, you know, like people tell you that clean time isn't important. Sorry, it is very important. It is important. It's important to this addict. And for me to participate in this process, and I'm not saying an addict, and it says it in step 12 that an addict one day clean can show an addict, you know, another addict, you know, that something's happening. But to actually participate in this process, if I want to be a secretary of a meeting, I need to have a year's clean time. If I want to be area, you know, want to be treasurer area level, I have to have 3 years clean time. For me, so for me to participate in this program, you know, in this program and in this process, clean time does matter. Ah, that was a quick 5 minutes. Blimey. And then, you know, the regularity of meetings. I love going to meetings. It's like a substitute for the pub now. I go to meetings. I just, you know, I go to lots of meetings. I still do 3 or 4 meetings a week. And then the other sort of, and the consistency of message. You know, don't pick up. Do the step work. Pray. Reach out to the newcomer. Speak to your sponsor. Do that stuff, and there's a good chance you won't use it. Well, it's sort of, is it like a cast iron guarantee? If you follow the suggestions, you won't use. And that's been my experience this time round. And the other thing is, I've got, you know, and I love what this spiritual program's given me is acceptance. And I share this all the time. You know, life is neither good nor bad; it just is what it is. So crack on, people. Life has got more magical, really, when you take the sort of magic out of it. Just that sort of gritty reality of life. I just love it. I love engaging in this process. I've got my family back in my life. I've got 2 wonderful daughters. I've got a grandchild. I have a relationship with my parents. I had my 60th birthday the other day, and I had people around there. And, you know, I would have loved to invite you all, but I couldn't, you know. You know, I could have filled that bloody restaurant up 20 times if I wanted to. So I just chose a few select people that I really like. No, just joking. But it just would have been great to have you all there, and we could have, you know, we would all have a good time. And so, yeah, this program's given me, it's like JF Kennedy says, you know, it's not what can NA do for you, but what you can do for NA folks, really. And it is around the service, it is about carrying a message, it is about going into prisons and doing service, it is about doing PI, it is about, you know, it's the service that we do. We take responsibility, once we come through that door, we start taking responsibility for our recovery, basically. And it is slowly, I'm moving away from the addiction, and I'm moving towards you guys, ever so slowly. You know, this takes time, my relationship, you know, like, I know people, you know, I know Dave, I know him, you know, I've known him for years, you know, we used up the West End, and, you know, and I knew Richard when I first come round, and, But I'm moving gradually towards people in NA, constantly trying to build relationships with people in this room. Because there's so many of you, you know, and I said it last night, it's a bit cheesy, but you're also bleeding lovely. I'd like to take you home with me and we could all live in a big house, but it ain't gonna, but I do make that sort of effort to sort of move towards people in recovery. Because, what is it? Let me see, what have I written here? You know, you lift my spirit. You guys. You lift my spirit. You make my life kind of worth living. Because without you, this is a we thing. You know, you lift my spirit. You know. And you let me see I'm part of something worthwhile. You are a reflection of me. I'm doing my best, you're doing my best. That's not a bad little trade-off. And it's as a result of participating in this process, this wonderful process of NA, and I will leave it there. Thanks very much. Thank you.